Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, I think we have to look at how we remember women and women's history and their impact, because she was very well known at her time. She actually, you'll see her later works here, some people are actually more familiar with, because she did The Love Stamp, which sold over 700 million copies. Wow. Yeah, so like a little piece of love on each one. And there's this great story about the launch of that they had thrown a party on the Love Boat and Creta did not show up because that's not the type of love that she had meant.
Welcome to A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers. For the guy who knows everything, he's still got a lot to learn.
That was Nellie Scott, the director of the Creta Art Center, talking about her mission, the art of Sister Mary Creta, later known as Creta Kent. As we walked down the small hallway gallery of the Creta Art Center next to the Immaculate Heart Community in Los Angeles, Nellie shows me around and I start to feel guilty. I felt guilty because I was looking at thoroughly modern typographic art that could be current. I really loved it, but I'd never seen it before. I felt sexist. How had I never seen that great artist, this great art? But that feeling of guilt, I soon would find out, was not due to my myopia. Although she influenced and was influenced by Eames and Cage and Warhol and Hitchcock and Fuller, Sister Mary Creta's art has yet to be as valued as these male artist and entertainment contemporaries. Yes, she's held in the greatest collections on earth and the greatest museums on earth. Yes, she has had retrospectives, but never to the extent of the pop artists of her time. Although she was very well known in her active period in the 1960s to mid-1980s, and she pioneered pop art printmaking techniques, she successfully stood up against Catholic leadership, she protested the Vietnam War, she was featured on Time magazine's cover, she created an enduring body of artwork that remains fresh today, she's just not as remembered as she should be. So let's fix that. Creta spent the last 20 years of her life in Boston as a full-time artist and has a huge body of work that's just being out there ready to be explored. She never removed herself from her ethos of universal love and the healing of faith, and I think that's something that we could probably adhere to today. Luckily, on November 20th, 2019, the city of Los Angeles is celebrating Creta Day, and I encourage everyone to go out there and find out more about her artwork and women artists in general. Now, my interview with Nellie Scott, the director of the Creta Art Center. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. I have no idea what time it is because it's a podcast, and people listen to podcasts whenever they do. Perhaps you are in a deep meditative state. Because we are going to get, well, are we going to get meditative? We're with Nellie Scott, the director of the Creta Art Institute. Art Institute?
Center,
Art collection, Center, collection, estate everything. Yeah. And it sounds like a thing, but it's a person. And today we're going to talk about one of the most remarkable women artists who you don't know that you already know, and I think it's criminal that people don't know, and Nellie's going to tell us why. Nellie, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm always happy to talk about Creta.
So Creta, that's quite a name, but this is short for Sister Mary Creta. She is a nun and a wild, wild nun.
That's true. Yeah.
the dissonance that you have of this amazing art, go to my Instagram right now and look at some of these pictures that we're posting in conjunction with this, or just Google Creta herself. How does this come about? How first talk sure. to her biography.
Yeah. So sure. Karita actually means little heart. And so that was her first name's actually Frances. But when she joined the order, she took on Karita as, so she was Sister Mary Karita. And she joined the Immaculate Heart of Mary here in Los Angeles, who has a long history of being educators. She got her master's at USC, was always an artist. Her father really, you know, was very instrumental in promoting her to enjoy making art. And I think that's something she carried with her always. And then, so she joined the order and she soon, raised in rank and ran the art department here when it was the Immaculate Heart College. She was here until 1968 and then spent the remainder of her years out in Boston until 86 when she passed.
And you are the steward of this absolutely amazing pre-1968 collection.
Yeah, yeah. So when she passed, she left her entire estate to the Immaculate Heart community. These are the women that were her sisters in habit, and so she left it to them to share with future generations. And so in 1997 they formally created the Karita Art Center as a tool to share that with future generations, and it's been a commitment ever since to her ethos in action.
What is it because her work has calls to action in it. Almost every single one that we're looking at in the Karita Art Center's conference room has some sort of either call or spiritual or just uplifting saying. There's a message in everything, because right. she does proffer in words. Most of her prints that we're looking at, words matter.
Yes, yes. I mean, the way that she weaves texts through really makes you look at not only the meaning behind the language that she's choosing, but also the beauty of the letters themselves, the typography, the graphic design elements. I think there's a nod to all of that. And her use of color and the way that she weaves in pop culture, it really, again, lends itself to being really accessible. And that's, even printmaking as a medium is so accessible. It's a way, originally, you know, educators could use it. It's something that she could teach other students to go out into the world to educate others. It's very engaging in the way that you pull, you know, it's a very physical act of pulling a screen.
Right.
And getting your message out into the world as fast as possible.
And immediately tangible. Yes. I literally just made that. There's no waiting. It's you put the screen down, you slather the ink over it, you pick it up and you set it to dry, and then in 15 minutes, boom, it's done. And there's the message.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of these messages? Because how do we get a nun making these radical, democratic, anti-war, anti-establishment, you know, nun? This is part of the establishment. Where's this coming from?
Well, that is a very deep question. and I think only she could really answer that. But we see it as, you know, how do you put into the world this message of like love, hope, and justice? And I think with social justice, you can't get to it without education either. So those are the kind of ethos that she's exhibiting in her work. She's weaving that into her practice. Almost, if you were taking like a look at her as a social practice artist, she's working with her students. She's working, it's very collaborative in nature. And the happenings of that creation and that beauty of that moment, and then taking that and then rippling that out into the world, as making real change.
Right. She's absorbing from the outside world and her students and then issuing it back out again, because she's definitely absorbing. She's consuming all the pop culture media of the time, and that is informing how she then reciprocates her message, right?
Right.
Again, I this is my part of the term, cloistered thinking, but I'm bump, no pun intended, where I'm like, I don't get this powerhouse of none quoting the Beatles, using newspaper covers, not ripping off, but lovingly, like being inspired by street signs and graffiti and lampposts, yet fully be habited.
Yeah. Could you imagine? It really, I think, shows her level of engagement. You know, we're lucky enough, we get to talk to her students that are still alive today, and they have these, you know, great moments that they share with us of how Creda inspired them to change the way they look at the world. Really, she would give her students like assignments to draw 100 drawings of just like the corner of your elbow, you know, in just practice alone of like changing the way that we look and taking that and viewing the rest of your life that way, just your everyday stuck in traffic. I guess I'll take a look at this street sign.
And how does that intersect with faith, though? Right. How does it? I mean,
right. Well, I think her faith is really, again, this is my opinion, just of looking at her work and living with it every day when I get to come here. I see her faith is really asking people to have their own call to action. You know, make your own art. Go out and make the change. Show up.
Show up.
Show up.
And that is, and by art, that I'm guessing from extrapolation of looking at this stuff, that art also is like your life's actions are part of the art, like right. Your social justice actions, your protest are part of the art, because while we were going through the collection, you know, there's protest marches and engagement with the children and teaching.
Yeah.
All in one sort of overarching artistic. I can't describe it. It's in everything. The everything, because like one thing doesn't exist in isolation.
Right. Exactly. And so I think to us as the estate, when we think of how do we honor her and how do we continue looking forward and take that call to action, it is what do we build? And I think sometimes estates get really caught up in, well, she would have liked that, or, you know, getting very like granular with it. But we are hoping to build something around the ethos that she exhibited in her lifetime. It's accessibility, it's education, it's social justice. You know, what can we build around that to continue that ripple effect of her messaging?
Now, earlier, while we were getting an awesome tour of the collection, you got on your, quote, soapbox.
Yeah.
and you pointed out a couple things. One, how contemporary her art is. Two, how much alike, yet inspired, yet informed, but unique it is to male contemporaries of the time, which brought up three, why don't more people know about this? Mm-hmm. And four, one of her most famous artworks is constantly misattributed to another artist.
Right.
And then five, we'll get to five the last, but actually, no, let's start with five.
Sure.
We've already seen her artwork. We just don't know it. Talk about the one that everyone has seen.
Right. You've probably received a letter with it in the corner. It's they sold over 700 million of her love stamps, which include one of her works, which says love.
Yeah, it says love. And you've probably You've probably mailed it.
You're
so
right.
We already know about her, but people probably are like, was that a Warhol? Right? Or and what's so soapbox away, please.
Sure.
Please go.
Oh, this anytime.
Is, yes.
Yes. Well, I think it is really unique, this estate. And I think that's why I personally was drawn to work here. Was that I think often when we remember women in history, specifically women artists, take a look at, you know, different foundations and endowed foundations around women artists, a lot of the time they're in relationship to their husband, right? As a pairing. But here you have this amazing woman who really worked in her lifetime to create change. And there's an entire group, another nonprofit, that is sitting behind saying, you're not going to forget her. Like, we're going to continue the good work that she was doing. And I think that's really unique in the art world. And so that excites me. I also think the fact that she is so prevalent and also cited. Artists that are working right now cite her as their influence. They read her 10 rules, or they look at her work. You know, in 2016, she won the AIGA award. Yeah, and then she was also inducted in 2016 into the California Hall of Fame. And so she is in every major museum collection. You know, she's in the collection at the Met, at MoMA, Whitney. The DIA just had some of her work included. She's in a Smithsonian show at the moment with artists responding to the Vietnam War. She's very well known and very accredited if you were to take a look at her CV. And again, not a household name. And I don't think that's unique for women artists. While there has been a big shift in acknowledging and inclusion of them into collections, there's still a lot of work to be done there.
There's a great Instagram account I follow called, I believe it's just called Women in Art.
Yes.
I love that one. I've discovered so many phenomenal artists from that.
Yeah.
Has Karita been featured on that Instagram account?
You know, we have been thinking of how do we better partner along those lines, because, you know, we are a little bit siloed here at this location, and how do we start expanding? And social media is such a great tool for that.
And this, as we were talking earlier while we're touring the collection, Karita is social media ready before social media. I mean, we're looking at these pictures. These prints are already square.
Yeah.
They're already colorful. You don't need a filter on these, you know? What did you say in the hall? Karita would love Instagram.
Right. Yeah. We've all collectively here been like, oh yes. It's the analog Instagram, her little viewfinders that we give out.
But the little viewfinders are their postcards about Karita, and they've got a square cut out so you can hold up and look through and witness the world as a square. And in a way, we're sort of doing it on our smartphones, and she sort of presaged that. Because she highlighted, like, by looking through her little viewfinder, she highlighted like just a portion of a sign, or what she did with the newspapers. Describe that process. How does one do that to make
Her process.
Nelly's going to describe the crumpled newspaper effect made into a print.
Right. So she was taking newspaper articles, let's say about the Vietnam War, and then physically crumpling them, then photographing them, and then projecting them up on the wall to then incorporate them into her serigraphs. And so we often remind people, like, Photoshop did not exist. And yet her work feels so contemporary.
It looks absolutely stunningly modern. Where was she informed? Because you said she was not your everyday nun.
No. When she, and you know, she was all over. Like, she was very much woven into the contemporary art scene here in Los Angeles. You know, she did see Andy Warhol's show when it was at Ferris Gallery. And while I don't think it was a direct inspired by, because I think that's a storyline that often happens, but she saw what he was doing, and she was incorporating that kind of practice and viewing that into her work and her practice. And so, yeah, she was all over. She'd take her students into gallery shows. And again, we were talking about it earlier. It's if you walked into, you know, a gallery in Chelsea and there was a nun with a group of students, you would do a double take.
Right.
It's unique even today.
Right.
And she was doing that back in the 60s. And I think that's really kind of speaks to her out of the box practice.
Right. And we've got, you know, now that you're talking and you are reminding me of some things of the past, we do have like the Hildegard von yeah. Bingen, who was a polymath artist, author, weird stuff she wrote, composer, right? So, and then also we've got the tenet of radical Christian love, right? Which usually doesn't go with Catholicism so much as, you know, radical Protestantism. But the radical Christian love, she really embraced it because it was all anti-war and the Watts riots she addressed, civil rights she addressed, and she came afoul of the Catholic establishment, did she not?
Right. Yes, very much so. At the time that Creda was the head of the art department here at Immaculate Heart College, they often butted heads, if you will, with Cardinal McIntyre, who was very conservative. You know, Vatican II happened, and people took that in very different directions.
Right. Vatican II opened up the church. It was, you could do everything in your local, right, your local tongue. Certain standards were relaxed for baptismal things and stuff. I don't know all about it, but I know that we're opening it up a little bit. It's not as obscure and Byzantine anymore.
Right. You can understand possibly what the person in front of you is saying.
Right.
Which is, you know, now we go, of course, that seems right. Natural.
But back then it was Spiritus Sanctus.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're done.
Yeah. And so I think that they, you know, again, I can't speak for them, but I view it as, you know, they took it as looking at the community and how do we really serve them? And that's what Vatican II was. How do we go into a community and really become an anchor in that community and serve them? So, you know, is that in or out of habit? Is that, you know, taking some of the tight regulations and being a little more relaxed so that we can actually make change and show up for the people that need change? And at that time in Los Angeles, you had the Watts Rebellion. You had racial issues coming to the forefront. You had the Vietnam War. All of these things were happening. And what is really amazing about her work is that it's so relevant to exactly what's happening right now in this world.
I hate that is the case, because it means we haven't done anything in 60 years. We haven't fixed anything.
Right. And I think that's why people are really drawn to Creda, because it's these messages of hope that we're looking for. It's really easy to watch the news and feel so bombarded with, like, everything's possible, but nothing's true. You know, what's going on? And then I'm so fortunate to come to work, and then I'll be in front of a Creda piece, and that quote that is included in that work is just what I needed to hear that day to be like, okay, we got to keep on track, doing the good work and creating hope, because I think that's ultimately what Creda was about, is creating hope.
Her quotes, where did they come from?
She pulls them from all over. You'll see them. There's poetry. There's
biblical quotes. There's things that are actually, you'll notice the Wonder Bread. So she's pulling from the grocery store. You know, like it's really great. It's that pop art.
Right.
Really accessible because you're like, I know that. I've seen that. I can relate to this. I could talk about this. She has Beatles quotes, right? She's got lyrics from folks. She has quotes from people who were marching at Selma at the time. So she is really reacting to the now. And that's, you know, again, some of the beauty of pop art is incorporating the everyday.
And what's her, what's Karita's legacy? Like her, what mark did she leave to those, both the children she educated in art and also the art world as a whole, because she left the order?
She did in 68. So she went out on a sabbatical to Cape Cod and left in 68. You know, I think that was a looking at what was happening in the world at that time, it was a lot going on, and Karita was really well known at that time. I think this is like a whole other soapbox about the digitization of women's history and publicity around women.
Soapbox away.
And how it's like, if it's not digitized, then it's so easy to forget it, and like in a current state of the world. So she really was, you know, publicly known. People knew who Karita was. And I think that actually kind of got to her here in Los Angeles. Like many artists, you kind of just want to do your work. And then she became a little bit more of a figurehead for this radical edge around Vatican II. And so I think she found a lot of solace in Boston. So she lived in.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Worked there for the rest of her years and did public and private commissions, including the gas tank that's there near Dorchester. It's the largest copyrighted artwork. It's a landmark there. Mm-hmm.
I read outside, I think, where they were going to take the gas tank down.
Yeah.
And when a new one was replaced, they had to replace the
right. Yeah. Yeah. It would have been a riot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. Where can people find Karita's work? You mentioned some of the galleries earlier, but where can they find the work online, and where can they learn more?
Right. So of course us at the estate, which is Karita.org. And you can follow us at Karita Art Center. I think the best way to engage her work is after learning a little bit more about her, is to create your own work. I think that's really what she would have wanted, is to be go out there and be inspired and create change and create art through your activism. And we're a resource. We're happy to have visitors anytime and talk about Karita. The Hammer also has a really great collection of her work.
The Hammer?
The Hammer.
Where's
yeah.
that?
That's here in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So you haven't made it over there yet.
No, I have not. I have not.
They've got a great resource on their website too. So when Karita passed, she left her overall estate to the Immaculate Art Community. So we have the most comprehensive of her archives, her writings, her pedagogy. And she did leave some prints to the Grunwald collection, which then is part of the Hammer. She also left a considerable amount of her archives to Harvard. So you can go there and read, and they're amazing. We just did that this summer.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then are there any huge Krita exhibitions coming up soon? Anything? What's in the works for Krita art? What do you guys have on the front burner? Back burner's later. Front burner now.
Well, we have a lot going on here. So at her 100th birthday, which was just this last year, we made the commitment to open a new facility in her honor here in Los Angeles. Lots of exciting details I can't quite share.
Absolutely.
But it's going to be really special. And we're building it around those ethos that we were talking about. You know, what does it mean to be an anchor in a community that needs to be served? How do we fill that arts education gap in a really accessible and democratic way? We're treading through that to see what that could look like. And I feel that we're in the process of building something really special that will be more accessible to researchers and to guests.
And how can people help you on your mission if they so decide? Volunteering, making more artwork,
money. Always, we will gladly take that. That's what we're looking at right now. We're kind of in this feasibility stage of what could this be?
Right.
And so it's been really great to see how many people, Krita, who both knew her and were inspired by her, to hear their stories and kind of popping their heads up, being like, this is really great. This should have been built. Let's do it. And so we're pretty excited, although we still have a lot of details that we're working out.
Awesome. Yeah. This is absolutely spectacular. It's so encouraging that the legacy of such a great artist is left in such good hands. And I hope that it encourages everyone else to go out there and explore more of the artists like Krita and more women artists, because, you know, go to that Instagram account go to Krita Art and Instagram and get out there, and it's not just all white dudes.
Yeah. I think the real takeaway is just show up.
And going out there and in embracing female art and artists is just showing up, you know, just do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think show up, even if it's not in an art gallery, show up to make change.
Yeah. Right?
Show up to vote.
Show up. Oh, God.
We'll start there. but, you know, it is showing up to make hope. So that's our whole mission here.
Nelly Scott.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Go to Krita.org and Krita Art on Instagram.
You.
Bye-bye. A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers is produced by myself, Maria Gibson, and Limitless Media. Please follow on Twitter at Austin Tylero, Instagram at Augra27, and Patreon, patreon.com/AustinRogers. Now, directly following this, I have an extended interview with Nelly vis-a-vis the individual tour of the gallery of the Krita Art Center. Enjoy some bonus material.
Original mother house that was on this property.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
1906. You'll enjoy. This was Franklin, the cow of what Los Angeles was like. And this is actually where the art department was. So this is where Krita was working. This building is no longer.
Yeah.
Got torn down in 1970 due to some seismic issues.
part of the original college that still exists is actually AFI, which is right up the hill, that they sold to AFI in the 80s, I believe. But yeah, so this is a good idea of what this property was like. So since 1906, it has served as an educational point for the city of Los Angeles. So kind of cool. So the collection itself is in chronological order. At the moment, it is in essentially a high school hallway. Last year was Carita's 100th birthday, and we made the commitment and announcement to Carita 100, which is looking at what the next 100 years looks like. So it's not my children, it's my children's children, and how that impact future generations. So you'll see her work in the 50s is really heavy. So she starts kind of getting the serigraphs. Should I hold? Okay, is that better? The serigraphs under her belt. And you'll see that they're really figurative, they're really heavy. She's pulling up to about 26 colors at a time, but there's always a nod to what was kind of contemporary at that time. So you'll see the Eames chair there mixed in with a biblical figure. So these works are heavier and a little bit darker colors than you see later on in the bright and colorful pops that she's a little bit more known for. Something I will point out is that she is signing her name Sister Mary Carita, but later on you'll actually see that she switches to Carita around 1960. Yeah. A question that often comes up is she signing in the plate or hand signing? So they're all individually signed. The edition sizes, some of them we have a good idea of what they are. Some of them are a little more loose because she actually didn't number them because she didn't want one to be more valuable than the next. Okay. So we view her practice as really conceptual in nature. You know, it's something that's really accessible to a large group of people. Paper is fairly cheap. You can get access to it. So that is something that she uses to kind of get her message into the world as fast as possible and spread out into the world as fast as possible. So she also, in addition to printmaking, she also was a photographer and did watercolors.
All super quick art.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you get your message out quickly?
Watercolors. Yeah. Ready to go. Photography. Yeah. Develop.
Exactly. So this is actually her handwriting. So she was, she uses something similar to a glue onto the silk screen. So she was really physical with her work and how, in her process. A good example is actually right over here. So these 60s works, which I hold near and dear to my heart, you'll see that they're actually really inspired by the city of Los Angeles. She was appropriating and pulling street signage from these long walks that she would take with her students. Mm-hmm. So here's some of the photographs here. So she would use something called a viewfinder, which we joke is like analog Instagram, that her students would go just to learn how to see. You know, sometimes I think in our everyday lives, we get really, there's a lot going on. And so being able to we're able to isolate.
We're doing it now,
yes.
No,
yeah.
We are sort of doing it when we pick up our phone and we're like, will this look good?
Is it in a square?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's.
It's old. By being old, this is modern.
She would have liked it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, clearly.
Oh,
look
yeah.
Look at this.
I mean. So something we often remind people who are a little bit of a younger generation is that Photoshop didn't exist. So she is physically manipulating the text. And while it seems chaotic in some areas, it's very purposeful. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see like where the arrow lands in between the text. And her quotes. So she's all about incorporation and appropriation. So you'll see little hints of messaging that's from the Beatles quotes, but then it also is paired with something that might be a little more faith-driven. We get into the 60s, mm-hmm. Vietnam War, so you actually see her reacting in some of these pieces. Here's a good Beatle quote here. So one of the works that we usually stop and point out to people as a real switch and real call to action as activism in her art, this is the cover of the Los Angeles Times, the morning after the Watts Rebellion. Mm-hmm. And so she takes it, she flips it on its side, and then accompanies a quote from a leader who was marching in Selma at that time. So really looking at racial issues and diving deep. So she would, another thing to know is she would take her students all over Los Angeles. Like she would go down to the Watts Towers and she would go out to all the extension of the entire county and really engage. And so mm-hmm. there was no really woven into the fabric of Los Angeles in that way. Here's the example of her. This is her photograph of the text. So she would take that and then project it. Yeah, to get it. Mm-hmm. It, when you look at the date on these, you go, oh, it looks really contemporary.
It looks right? Incredibly.
Yeah. Right?
And then you see 1965.
Yeah.
No, it does not compute.
Yeah, so this series is really special. This is called The Heroes and Sheroes. It's a series of 29 works that she created, and you'll see that she actually incorporates a lot of media mm-hmm. in these. So, you know, I think sometimes people think of nuns or people of faith that were, you know, just siloed, but she had her radio on. She was watching the news just like anyone else, and in a state of just dismayed over what was happening. So this is one of the pieces. Maybe if it was the building was burning, I would run out with
this one.
I really resonate with me because, you know, I can watch the news at home and I feel really lucky to come to work. And whatever quote I might need to read to feel better about the world, you know, I find my way here. And this work in particular talks about what hope means and that it's not, you know, it's not just optimism, it's about showing up and how do you show up to make change. And I think that is a running theme throughout all of Creda's work, is about hope mm-hmm. and what hope means. She's here to create hope and opportunity. While a lot of her work has a call to activism, it's always with like a sense of joyous revolution. So this work in particular, I really enjoy. But this entire series really dives deep into the Vietnam War. This was her studio that's actually across the way. It's the dry cleaner.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So this property is really special to us, right?
Yeah.
It's where the school was.
And is that her...
on the cover of Newsweek? Well, it is.
That is her... open studio announcement.
Right? Every
is that what it
every
is?
Friday. It's pretty great. So she often uses box making. So she, in addition to the works that she left in her estate, we also are champions of her pedagogy. She was an educator, so she essentially left us a manual of how we can teach future generations and incorporate art into our lives. So box making is one of the practices. And I think if you think of her almost as a social practice artist, she's about happenings and creating these moments collectively. So this is Phil and Dan Berrigan, pretty notable activists, and she was very good friends with Dan Berrigan. This is the Mary's Day. So often people come in and they think this is a protest, but it really was a celebration, and it was centered around world hunger. So a lot of these women were women that were actually at the Immaculate Heart College. So this looks like the Kotzen Center here, which is just up the hill. So in 1967, she takes a sabbatical, goes out to Cape Cod, and does this series called the Signal Code series, thinking about how we use language to communicate with one another. They're really great. And so they're all, you'll see that they look like the Signal Code flags that you would use if you were out at sea. Mm-hmm. She does come back and leave in 1968, and then spends the rest of her adult life out in Boston and working there as a professional artist. She was not shy about taking commissions. The largest copyrighted work is there in the Boston area. It's actually a gas tank. It's like this landmark that it's got this big swash of color across it. Wow. It's in near Dorchester.
Okay. No.
Yeah, awesome. It's cool, right? Yeah, so I think, like many women artists, this is where I got my little soapbox. You know, I think we have to look at how we remember women and women's history and their impact, because she was very well known at her time. You know, she actually, you'll see her later works here, some people are actually more familiar with, because she did the Love Stamp, which sold over 700 million copies. Wow. Yeah, so like a little piece of love on each one. And there's this great story about the launch of that they had thrown a party on the Love Boat and Creta did not show up. Okay. Because that's not the type of love that she had meant. She's a humanitarian love of, again, what it means to be a human. Mm-hmm. So I see a lot of parallels sometimes, and I've had this conversation with a few people, and when you think of Creta and her impact, almost similar to Mr. Rogers. I know that seems like a weird combo to put together, but the way that he used his faith and he used film as this democratic way to reach audiences, to say, you know, what does it mean to show up and what does it mean to be a good human in this kind of joyous way? I see a lot of that in her work. So she actually reacted to the love. There's a second love, and it says, love is hard work. So that was her reacting to the Love Boat incident. She did die in 1986. And so that's when she left her estate to the Immaculate Heart Community. Okay. So they all left, well, not all of them, the majority of them left the order of Immaculate Heart of Mary in 1970 and created an ecumenical community, a nonprofit that has been woven throughout Los Angeles. Okay. So they all kind of took that call to action themselves and created nonprofits, started Save Schools, like what it means to show up. Mm-hmm. And so they actually are celebrating their 50th anniversary next November. Yeah, so that's the other offices here, is part of the community, the nonprofit community. So we, as the estate, live under that umbrella, which is kind of really neat. Yeah. Because we're able to come up with this idea and then work with another nonprofit that's under the same umbrella all together. So if we want to do a program, which we just started some pilot programming in Panorama City with Casa Esperanza, and they've been using Creta's pedagogy to make art with kids in after school programs and stuff. So yeah, it's been really, it affords us a lot of flexibility there in what we're able to do. So kind of great. Awesome. Let me show you, there's some more. So this is the collection. Where we house it currently. Obviously, as you can see, the facility is not great, right? So we recognize that, like, our commitment to her is the preservation of her work and protecting that for future generations. So that's why we're in the process of looking at what a new facility would be. Mm-hmm. And again, soapbox moment. I do feel like if she had been a man, considering who her contemporaries were, this would have already been built by now. Mm. Yeah. So in here we have some of the archives you guys might be interested in. There's a lot of her writing, which we also are the caretakers for, But there are some letters too that we can pull out that are between her, not her, but the order and Cardinal McIntyre. So he was here with the diocese in Los Angeles, quite conservative. I think you have a big, when you look at what happened in Vatican II, there's different camps of people went more conservative, and then people took it really like, let's go out into the world and make change. Mm-hmm. And the Immaculate Heart community leaned that way. So there are some stories I've heard of him coming, stomping his boots, telling them kind of what they were going to do. And they got a kind, no, this is what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. So the art department here was pretty on the radical edge. She was very knowledgeable and in the mix of the art scene here in Los Angeles at the time. She would take her students to gallery shows, which if you can imagine going into a gallery show now and seeing a nun with her students, you would take a double take. And she was out there. She was involved, very much absorbing what was happening. She would host something called the Great Men Series. And that's where she would have people like Ray Eames and Buckminster Fuller and other notable men of that time to bring them on campus. We're hoping to actually reframe that and start that again and call it the Great Human Series and bring in people to start having lectures. So, so this is the archival room, as sad as it might be, in different states. The only other one I would probably show you that you guys would find really interesting, I have one on my office wall. It is this one. This is the circus alphabet. So she did a second alphabet series. And they're really colorful, but also if you read the text, they're kind of dark. but this, as an alphabet, is in the collection at MoMA, actually. A lot of really great stuff. This is another earlier one here. But again, they feel so contemporary, right? Absolutely. And what's really neat is, considering how old they are, how vibrant the color is. Mm. Yeah, it has its, when we have tried to look at like publishing books, it is a little complicated. It doesn't quite translate. No, it doesn't. Here's the art department busy at work.
It's so, the juxtaposition of those severe habits.
I know. And the burst of color.
Amazingly insane contemporary art. It just, there's a cognitive dissonance going on right there. I'm not getting it.
Yeah.
But I am getting it, but I'm not getting it.
Well, I think that's part of the story, right? It's like the liberation that you see, someone who lives their life literally in black and white and the color that just pours out of them. And then you see after she's out of habit, she was a big fan of Marimekko. So these like bright, colorful clothes, right, all of a sudden that they're able to wear and real joy. But yeah, it's really interesting to see. And you have to imagine, it had to be so hot.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know, we're in LA. There's no AC.
No air conditioning.
And working. Yeah, there's a few photographs we have of her working. She would pin up her arms, right? To make sure. The other thing, this is interesting, you guys will enjoy. I have a little one that I'll give you. Along with some viewfinders. So these are the 10 rules. These are often misattributed to John Cage. Again, another possible gender issue there.
A little bit.
These were actually created at Immaculate Heart College, and they're really special, and people kind of pluck what rule they needed to hear that day, I think. So I should just put the only rule is work and have a, you think they're
And that's the viewfinder.
Yeah, these are the viewfinders. So you guys can take your own.
So cool.
Slow looking. Yeah, right?
I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, so it is really, I have to say, since I've started here, I suddenly notice street signage more. I take a look at just the typography on just about everything. And, you know, it's, she teaches us how to, like, appreciate our everyday details. So yeah,
sit
we can
down and continue.
Yeah, we can continue. Yeah,
This has been A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers, produced by myself, Austin Rogers, alongside Maria Gibson and Limitless Media. If you like this program, please go to patreon.com/AustinRogers and subscribe and give me money for some reason. And now we'll end it out with my question of the week, recorded live from New York's The Waylon at 50th and 10th Avenue. If you think you know the answer, write back at Austin Tylero on Twitter and give me some suggestions for other questions you want to hear and other A Little to Learns you want to hear. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next Thursday? Sure, whatever.